Welcome to another edition of Chuck and Doug Reloaded. Doug, I want to tell you that our little podcast turns 21 today.
Our how about 21st that?
Episode.
It's pretty good.
We never thought it'd last past two.
Yeah, you know, to think we made it this far, we hadn't fought yet.
Yeah, I think we're too tired to fight.
Well, I think we're too tired.
I think life is beating us down to a pulp, and we don't want to fight.
I think it's the once a week thing. I think we can kind of, you know, like the once a week is, if we had to do this every day, we would have fought several times by now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's really a good negative spin to put on everything. It couldn't be that we're adults now and that, you know, we were adults before, but that we've grown.
That's kind of my point.
And that we've become better humans and that we are willing to listen to more opinions. But no, it's just the fact that we're not together as much and in person in the same room.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
okay.
That's right.
I can go with that.
Okay.
All right. Before we get started, I do want to say just one thing, Doug. You know, your family's been going through some medical concerns with your wife. Jennifer is getting on the mend and doing better and trying to get to a place where she was before. Your family's been in our thoughts and prayers. Anything you need, let us know. Because we know that it's been such a struggle for, you know, it's been a little bit of a wild ride for y'all, but thank God everything's going in the right direction.
It seems to be heading in the right direction right now. Yes, thank you for that, and you and everybody else that has helped out and has reached out and has, you know, just like I said, in any kind of way has helped. It's been appreciated. The thoughts, the prayers, all that stuff. And like I said, my wife is on the mend. She is heading the right direction. We're, you know, on the road to recovery, but it's going to take a little while. So. Hopefully we're good. She does not have COVID. So let me just get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like you have to qualify.
You do
now. Like
everything.
You have to say that before everything when you're talking about stuff, but you know, I don't want to get too far into, you know, her health situation, but it took a weird turn and it just kept spiraling downward for a while. And it's finally spiraling back up again somewhat, so that is a good thing. And like I said, I appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers on that.
Yeah, I think they officially declared her with Doug Colsonitis. I mean, we've all had a bout of that, but I think she just got the most severe bout, because what you were talking about earlier, she's been in the same room with you for 30 years.
Speaking of not wanting to spend, let's not make it more than it is. Okay, we'll be married 20 years in March.
Yeah. So.
You know, but yes, she probably has had to endure way more than a lot of people have.
Yeah. We're recording on Tuesday, 8:25. There was a blood drive yesterday for Jennifer, and I believe you could still go to Mississippi Blood Services if you need and donate in her name, correct?
You can, yeah. And the code is DZ04. If you want to donate. She, through what she had to use several units of blood. So we're, you know, the blood was there for her. We're trying to replenish and give back, you know, fill the, you know, restock, so to speak, the shelves there at Mississippi Blood Services. And like I said, we've done a pretty good job with it. But if you're in the next couple of days and, you know, maybe you get a chance to go by, or some people are on a regular schedule to donate, you know, you can certainly throw her code out there and that will certainly help.
That's so, DZ04, right?
Yes. Right. And we appreciate anybody that has already helped too. The outpouring has been really, really strong with that.
It's because they care about her and Margaret, not so much about you.
Correct. Yes. That's again. Yeah. You know, so, but it is, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of people that have already donated and reached out, and we appreciate that. We had the blood drive yesterday at her school. And there was a lot of, you know, parents and teachers and that kind of stuff that stopped by, and donated, which was great. There was a lot of people who did it last week that started, you know, last week and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was, like I said, if you, a little plug for Mississippi Blood Services too. I mean, even if you don't donate, look, I've donated in the past. I didn't realize, you know, until this thing came around, how long it's been since I've actually donated. And it's easy to, you know, lapse, and it's easy to forget, you know what I mean? It's easy to go, oh yeah, you know, and just keep putting it off, putting it off. And like I said, I know it's been far too long since I've done it, and I need to do it more frequently. I can tell you that much.
Weren't you always kind of a weenie about it though?
No, didn't you get a little
skittish about it? I mean, you were fine when you did it, but it was the thought of doing it. I seem to remember that at the radio remotes. Is that right?
Okay. I passed out one time.
I'm throwing everything out.
I know.
That's right.
Remember, I passed out one time, and I didn't even pass out. I felt like I was going to pass out, and I caught it beforehand. But we rectified that because I do the double unit now, and that helps me because I get fluid back on doing the double unit, you know. So and I haven't had a problem since. So yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it.
We're not going to have our first fight on the podcast, but we'll have one afterwards because Doug's going to come after me for putting his business on the street like that.
No, that's fine. That's okay. I mean, we used to do plenty of radio remotes over there.
Yeah,
at Mississippi Blood Services at the old building, and you look at that new facility that they have.
On treetops.
It's funny you talk about fighting, right? So. Yeah. This is a great story for that. So we had a radio remote out there. This is after you had left the show and Jay and I were doing the show.
Yeah.
And so I had all the equipment. You know, he was supposed to meet me out there. We're supposed to set up and do the thing, do the show and everything. He forgot we had the remote and went to the studio.
Oh.
And left me out there in the pouring rain setting up all the equipment by myself. I was.
Did you cuss him?
That might have been the maddest I've ever been doing that show, because I was sitting there soaking wet because I was drenched because I had to be outside setting that up by myself, and then you know never mind I had to do the you know first portion of the show until he could get there. And come in there, but yeah, no, we, like I said, buried the hatchet over that, but it's funny now, but it wasn't at the time. I can tell you that much, but, yeah, it was, you know, like I said, you knew the trials and tribulations we had with, actually doing remotes and what went into setting those up. And, if you ever had to set one of those up yourself,
yes,
it was quite the enduring process.
Yeah, the equipment that we had to work with, that sounded great once it got up, but it was invented by Marconi.
Yeah. So, it certainly was.
It was a first-generation radio remote system.
Yeah, so, I related it more to, like, World War II communications.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were out in the field, we had a guy who carried a pack on his back.
And he was doing the spinny thing.
Yeah, somebody had to dial it up. You had to get this thing going. Exactly.
We'll try to put a bow on this so we can get a little bit of sports in here for this, but just so thankful that Jennifer's on the mend and
yes,
you know, we're very, very happy to hear all of that. And
yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, Doug, we've been through some stuff together with, you know, just our lives to have they intertwined, and we've been there for some significant moments in our lives together. Yeah. And I mean, it's really shaped us into understand what's really important. You know, we talk about sports all the time. We love sports, but what's really important is what's in the house and who's around you. Right.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you, you know, after being laid off from the radio show in January of this year, one of the things that, you know, we've talked about, it was one of the things I mentioned when I posted on Facebook about getting laid off, was, you know, how important the show has been to me over the last, you know, 23, 24 years for family tragedies and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was an escape for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Through things that I went through with, you know, my mom getting sick and my mom passing away, my sister passing away, my brother-in-law passing away, you know, through all those issues that I know I dealt with, it really, like, I knew that was 3 hours every day that no matter what I was going through, I could lose myself in the radio show and escape from doing some of that. And it kind of scares me that I don't have that now. So, you know, if something does happen, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do at this point. But, you know, from that to the good things that happened, you know, from my daughter being born and getting married and that kind of stuff, you know, I mean, all the advice I got from listeners over the years, it was certainly appreciated.
Well, and I think we both can say too, well, first off, the support they provided during those bad times, like when things were going bad or, you know, there was all, even if people disagreed with you, they still cared about you as a person. You know, anybody that was on the radio that they had a connection with, but the support they provided during those bad times was really always, always good too. And, you know, I came out of that radio show, Doug, with, aside from you, you know, listeners and stuff that have become really, really good friends, like really good friends. And that's a, that was also, that's one thing that'll be missed too, I think, is that connection to people from that radio show.
Oh, there's, like I said, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, I mean, you talk to people, they became family. You talk to people every day. You ran into people, you know, it became, like I said, I mean, that part of it is what I miss, is I miss the listeners more than anything else. You know what I mean? I, you know, it was fun as an outlet to, you know, talk sports and that kind of stuff. But, you know, yeah, that was the, that's the part you end up missing, is the camaraderie and the friendships that you make over the time.
Yeah, it was, it really was one of my most favorite things that I did in my career prior to the job that I'm in now, which is absolutely fulfilling in a bunch of different ways. But that radio was always the most fun because I felt like I could be myself there more than anything than on the television or anything. You kind of had a different kind of a feel about things. But that radio, that was me talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And right. I mean, that was us talking. And I remember people always, you know, not always. There were some people that thought that we were putting on some sort of a good cop, bad cop shtick. But everything that we did was... was every fight we had was real.
and that wasn't my, you know, and I'm kind of the same way. I didn't, you know, I didn't think it made sense to go on there and, you know, play a role or, you know, have some sort of a, you know, this is how I'm going to act over this, or I'm going to take this side of an argument, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I think that's why it was authentic, because when we agreed, and when we disagreed, we disagreed.
Yes.
And, you know, and that was the same way with the listeners. I think the thing that I stuck out to me more than anything else, and it's not a specific, you know, issue one way or the other, but something that I really feel proud of, was I got such a kick out of, like, if I could get somebody that called in mad at me, you know, that they called in and something I said just infuriated them so much.
You were happy and a lot of times then.
No. Right. Exactly. but I feel like I'm bragging on myself here for a second, but I could talk to those people and I could turn them around, and by, they might've been cussing me before they called.
Yeah.
They were angry at me when they called and got on the radio and got on the phone, and I would find some common ground and find some way to where when we were done with that call, maybe they didn't agree with what I said, but they had a better understanding of what I said. And again, like, I know there were a lot of people that became regular callers like that, but you know, I would have said something that, 'cause you know, as well as I do in that business, it's, you know, you get some people that just pick up the phone to call you, but you have to kind of, people have to be motivated to call. And a lot of times it's that they're angry because of something you said. And, yeah. you know, yeah. like I said, I felt like I always had that ability to, you know, get that person to agree with something that I said, find some sort of common ground to where they kind of understood where I was coming from. And I kind of understood where they were coming from.
Yeah.
And by the time they were done with the phone call, they might've been cussing me out 3 minutes earlier, but in those 3 minutes, we found some sort of common ground to kind of, you know, move forward on. Now, sometimes it extended a couple of calls, you know, we might've screamed sometimes and yelled at each other for a couple of calls, but you know, I felt like I was always able to find some common ground. And you know, as much as hard as I am on Alabama fans, probably more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Some of the people that I'm most friendly with from that show.
Yeah.
Are Alabama fans. So, you know, it's that was always kind of interesting to me. I always liked pushing the envelope and prodding the Alabama fans, and they would, you know as well as I do, would call and be very mad. There were times I needed to look over my shoulder going to my car and that kind of stuff. But I was always I always enjoyed you know, going back and forth with them.
Yeah, it was yeah. I mean, there were callers that you loved to hear from. There were callers that you didn't like to hear from. But in the long run, the ones you didn't like to hear from typically generated the best conversations. You know,
yes.
I mean, really, because there's a few, I'm not mentioning any names on this, that when I was there, that would, if I knew they were on the line, I hated it. But typically it would generate a more animated conversation, good or bad, but you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, there were sometimes it was bad. It was, sometimes it was good, but that, like I said, I always, that was the thing I always enjoyed, was taking somebody that was spitting nails. And by the time we got done with that phone call over the next 2, 3, and you know, sometimes 5 minutes, I could get them laughing about something. And we had a better understanding of each other by the end of that phone call. It's a gift.
It's a gift that you've given to us all.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what that means, but okay.
I think my point is, I don't know if I didn't take stuff that serious. You didn't. I don't know, but
I always gave you credit away from you, that you really, that you enjoy. Well, yeah, I think I probably told you, we've talked about this, I guess, but when people talk to me about that show, and they still do, even though it's been, I don't know, when did I leave? 11. So almost 10 years since I left the show.
Right.
But
right.
It was always authentic, but you really, you could talk about anything, you know, any sport that was going on, you could talk about it because you had some sort of working knowledge, whether it was peripherally or you had some working knowledge. I was more hyper-focused.
Doesn't mean I was right about stuff.
No, but you were, well, no, you weren't right about most things. But you would have conversation. You could have conversations about things because you would know about it. And if somebody called about something that you didn't know about, you would go and you would follow up on that and look at it or trail it better than anybody, really. I think that what made, when you and I were together, I think you were the one that was the driving catalyst of it, because you could talk about anything and were willing to. Because you were immersed in sports. Mine was more of a local focus and a, you know, what the things that I liked focused. You had a broader view of everything. I firmly believe that. I mean, I've always said that, you know.
Well, hang on. But you're right. You had a much better view of the local stuff and that kind of stuff. I had the range of a Daisy air rifle when it came to high school sports, and you could do high school sports, you know what I mean, all day long, and golf and some of the other stuff too. I mean, but I think that's, again, I think that's from doing a show with people. It's always, what does that person bring to the table, and finding that and really capitalizing on that. I mean, you know, like we talked about Jay was a huge baseball guy, you know what
yeah.
I mean? So
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, you handle the baseball stuff, you handle this part, you handle that part. And that's what it comes down to when you're doing a show like that. You have to, you know, everybody kind of brings something to the table and you play to people's strengths.
But you were also much more opinionated than I was too, which generated good conversation. You know, I was kind of like, it is what it is, or this, or I don't really have a stance on that. But you've always had a stance pretty much on any. If I gave you five topics right now, you'd have a stance on those probably. You know,
maybe that's not a good thing.
No, that's a great thing for what we were doing and what we do now.
Yeah, and I probably got less opinionated as the show went on, if that makes more sense. But yeah, no, when we were doing the show, yes, I was definitely more opinionated.
Yeah. So
and some people didn't really like that, but you know, like I said, I agree with you. I think it was all in good fun and made for a good show and that kind of stuff.
And if people take opinions too seriously, and people do, we know that, and especially now. People are really offended by anything that is not in their line of thinking.
You know, it's funny that we've been through some of the years that we put behind us on some of that. Like, there were things that we could talk about that I don't think you could talk about now. There were people were way more open for, you know, maybe they had different ideas, but like, you could have conversations about stuff, certain things that I don't know if you can have conversations about now.
Because
I wouldn't know how to do it now when we did it before and it seemed like we could do it and everybody was willing to. I think people are so polarized now. And I don't know if people were as polarized. People had way different opinions, but it just seemed like we could get a variety of opinions and we would, you know, hash it out. I don't know if we solved anything, but, you know,
we would at least listen and hear from people.
Yeah. And I don't know if, and I'm not saying from us, but you know, like I said, I mean, just what you would get feedback from listeners and that kind of stuff. It seems like there was a change there somewhere along the way. Don't know exactly where, but it just seemed different back, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a trip down memory lane for about 30 minutes. Ooh, talking about the all radio days. But anyway, so let's get into a few of our topics here that we've got to get covered. You know, the SEC schedules were released, the all SEC schedules, all 24/7 SEC football. You're only playing right. SEC teams. And we talked a little bit about who got kind of hosed on the last podcast.
Missouri and Arkansas.
Yeah. Who got hammered. But what do you think about Mississippi State and Ole Miss's schedules? Let's go a little more in depth on those. I mean, State opening with LSU at LSU.
Yeah, they start, you look at theirs. I mean, you know, they start at LSU. That's certainly a tough game. Then they back that up with Arkansas at home. Yeah. And they're at Kentucky. They got A&M at home, and then they're at Alabama. You know, you look at those first four, and, you know, is there an opportunity to be, you know, I mean, you would think worst case scenario, 2-2 probably.
I think one and three could be in play. Kentucky is kind of I don't know that Kentucky's a pushover.
No, that's a straight toss up game. I don't think there's any question. The Arkansas game, they should win certainly at home.
If they don't, it's going to be a bad year.
Yeah, I mean, A&M is going to be a
tough one.
You know, I mean, that's tough, but you're at home. I think, you know, you got a chance of winning that game. You got some, you know, I think that could be interesting. After that, it's, you know, at Alabama, that's certainly going to be tough. Then they have Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Then Auburn, Georgia, certainly going to be tough. And then they're at Ole Miss, and they close out with Missouri. So, I throwing these schedules in all SEC format makes them really difficult to predict, because you don't have that, you know, all right, well, they've got a break here, and they've got these automatic built-in wins, and they've got – you know, like you can ramp up to this game and then you can build up to this game. And you don't have that. I mean, it's going to be it's going to be a straight, you know, you're playing SEC teams every week. That's the kind of fascinating thing for me is, what does this mean for, you know, when we start looking at the playoffs and we start looking at, you know, where teams are going to finish and what teams are going to, you know, contend for an SEC title and that kind of stuff. You know, is there a team that we expect to be really good in the SEC that, you know, is going to take on an extra loss or two? Is it going to affect, you know, how is this going to affect what we're used to seeing? Are we going to see the cast of usual suspects in the college football playoff? I think some people think that. Or are we going to have, like, chaos? I mean, is it going to be chalk or is it going to be chaos? I mean, are we going to be getting the same old teams that we always get in the playoffs? Or is it going to be, you know, who knows? You know, I mean, is a Clemson going to get messed up or an Alabama get messed up or a Oklahoma get messed up because they're playing, you know, straight conference schedule?
Well, there's less to pick from, though. There's conferences not playing.
Well, sure. I mean, does that open up a potential third slot for the SEC?
Oh, easy.
I mean, could yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, could an Oklahoma, let's just say Oklahoma jacks itself up and there's nobody else in the Big 12 that's worthy. And, you know, so you end up with a Clemson and three SEC teams potentially. I mean, what would that do for the college playoff system? Would that be enough to push people in the direction of we have to expand and this and that?
They're going to wipe this season from the slate. It's not going to mean anything in terms of future of the, because they're going to go, you know, this was an anomaly. This isn't going to happen again until it happens again in 21. But they're going to say, you know, this is not anything that's going to be a determining factor. I would hope it would open up to a 16 team playoff, but I've been pulling for that for years.
I don't want to see.
Right. I know.
You know, I don't want to see
one of those opinions you had that was bad. But this is not going to change anything.
This is one of those opinions that I probably am a little full of myself on, because I feel like I could be, I could save college football if they let me.
Everybody thinks they can save college football if they let them.
I know I can.
Oh, well, there's the difference.
There's the difference.
Yeah. So I don't think it's really going to matter much. It's going to be really weird. I mean, there's not going to be any bowl games, are there?
I don't know what the postseason holds. I have no idea.
Can there be? There's like 4,000 bowl games, and there's like 30 teams playing this year.
I mean, don't ask me. I don't know what the future holds. You know what I mean? I don't. Let's get through. You know, and I can see where, you know, maybe you're not going to have bowl games, but you're going to have a college football playoff.
Playoff.
You know, you're going to have. You know, wouldn't it be interesting if they said, you know, and they would never do it. But because of, you know, this situation, that kind of stuff, hey, we're going to do an 8-team playoff. You know, like just like we talked about, like you said, this is our 21st podcast. You know, you go back. You remember we had that conversation when we didn't know whether we were going to have sports and sports was trying to come back. And we were like, everybody try, you know, like if you're one of these leagues right now, anything you wanted to try, this is the perfect year to try something new and crazy, right?
Well,
I mean, this
except
is the perfect year to try to.
No, because the exception to that, or the what would keep that from happening, is the lack of participants that you have to do something wild and crazy. I mean, you don't have the teams to fulfill all of these roles. I mean, do you think a 6-4 Auburn team, I'm picking on Auburn just because I'm looking at their name, or a 6-4 Texas A&M needs to being an 18 playoff because there's just not anybody else to feel it? I mean, the Citrus Bowl featuring 1-9 Vanderbilt against,
an 18 playoff would still be better than what we have.
I agree with that.
Maybe a 4-team playoff this year where we're down two conferences and that kind of stuff works, you know, but, you know, I still – it never makes any sense to me why you would leave out a conference. You know, there, it makes no sense to not have five playoff spots, take your champion from each conference, yeah, and then have yourself, you
three
know,
two wild cards.
No, yeah, but I mean, have yourself two wild cards and have yourself the best group of five team, and then have your 8-team playoff. It's essentially a 16-team playoff because all your conference championship games are de facto playoff games. So, right. You know,
yeah, well,
it really, you know.
You're not like the only genius that's thought of that, by the way.
I feel like I've been fighting that battle for a long time.
No, in a bull, your battle was keep it at four teams for the longest.
Oh, hang on. Whoa.
Here's our first fight.
Yeah, I was fine with four. Okay, yeah. I was fine with
which is
four.
Wrong. So there, and I settled it.
And again, I was for expanding it to you know, I was for expanding it to six and then expanding it to eight. And my point is, if you can have your championship games, you can expand it to eight. You don't have to go to 16. 16 is too much to try to do a playoff and that
blah, kind of.
If you incorporate the conference championship games into your 8-team playoff, then you essentially have 16 teams in your playoff.
Yes, but if they don't do that, then it's not a 16-team playoff. If they don't incorporate, if they don't make those mandatory that the winner goes regardless of their record, if you know, let's say 8-4 Arkansas upsets Florida, you know.
Well, you know, that's always the argument that people try to make is like, well, what
I don't try to
somebody,
make it.
I know, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the argument that everybody always tries to make. And it's like, well, you know, if you look at other sports, we've seen wild card teams go to Super Bowls and win them.
Yeah.
We've seen teams. The team that doesn't have the best record doesn't always win. You know, I mean, that's kind of how a playoff works.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
I'm with you, brother.
I don't know why it's different for college football as opposed to every other sport. But,
yeah. Why is that the only NCAA sport that doesn't have an official championship? But anyway, as governed by the NCAA. Okay, so we didn't talk about Ole Miss's schedule. Six games against ranked teams.
Yeah. It started off with Florida, too, at home. I mean,
at home.
That just starts off tough, and then it's at Kentucky, and then they've got Alabama, and then they're at Arkansas. I think with them, you're looking at, you know, you want to sit there and say, boy, if they could go 2-2 out of the first four, that'd be great. But even then, you're talking about winning two games on the road, you know, because I don't think people have them beating Florida. I don't think people have them beating Alabama. Both those games are at home. And then you're looking at, you know, at Kentucky and at Arkansas as the winnable games there out of their first four. You know, maybe they start 1-3. And then after that, they have Auburn at home, at Vanderbilt, South Carolina coming in, at Texas A&M, Mississippi State at home, at LSU. Let me ask you this. If you're and first of all, how about the Egg Bowl not being the last game of the year? What are your thoughts on that? You have any?
You know, that happened, was it 2011? I mean, 2001 when State played BYU at the end of the season. And I can't remember if Ole Miss had a game or not, but I seem to think that they did. I can't remember back. But yeah, I mean,
was that because of 9/11?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And I remember, and the only reason I remember State is because somebody said it on Twitter. I saw. So I'm trying to look back real quickly right now.
If you remember,
They played Vanderbilt. State. They played Vanderbilt on December 1st.
Okay. Mississippi State played the first game after 9/11. In the country.
Yeah. I do remember that. I think I was at that game, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
I know I was at it. They played South Carolina, and because my cousin got married, actually, he was getting married that weekend, and we were going to Atlanta, and we went to the game Thursday and then drove to Atlanta after that. But yeah, it was Thursday night game.
Yeah, I've heard some Ole Miss fans go, it's better, you know, now the real rivalry is the last game of the year, and I think that's a bunch of a crock of hooey because they're playing LSU.
But you know, Ole Miss fans like to
– Yeah.
That's their bigger rival, a lot of them.
Well, and did you know, and I saw this on the Twitter world, that I didn't think about it or wasn't aware of it, that Mississippi State's final home game on December 5th. They're also scheduled to host the MHSAA State Football Championships this year, that weekend.
Yeah, they'll have to figure something out.
Yeah. Man, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they probably will trade with another, you know, they'll just trade it off with one of the other schools.
Is Ole Miss – Ole Miss is at LSU, right? Is that right?
December 5th, yes.
Yeah.
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 And it was at Hattiesburg last year, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I just think, you know, these schedules – let me ask you this. If you're a team with a first-year head coach, and that goes for Arkansas, Missouri, Ole Miss, Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You know, with this and not playing a conference schedule or a non-conference schedule and the way this schedule is set up, and it's certainly more difficult, do you almost, you know, I mean, does this year even count? Does this year – I'm curious what fans, you know, does the clock tick on
– On coaches?
You know, does it start on these coaches, or is there
– No.
Is there a different
– Well, I mean, I don't know. If he goes – if a coach goes – 0-10, and then next year goes 0-12. Yes,
right. But what I'm saying is, if you're a first year head coach and you're having to deal with this, never mind you're installing a new system. Never mind, you know, if you had some non conference games at the beginning of your schedule, it would allow you to build up some confidence. It allow you to, you know, when you're coming out of the block playing, you know, Florida and playing LSU. I mean, you know, when you're, you know, it doesn't give you a chance to get off to a great start is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And, you know, these years would be different if they would have had different schedules, I think. And I don't think, especially the schools in this state, they're not going to put up the records that we thought they could put up with what they've added to, you know.
It's a gauntlet. 5 ranked teams right now for state, 6 for Ole Miss.
Right.
Conference teams. And I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, when you're playing for Ole Miss, 60% of your schedule is against superior, in air quotes, superior talent and programs right now. And for state, it's 50%. I mean, you're going to have to.
Never mind the fact that you've got first year head coaches and you're trying to implement stuff and you're trying to, you know, I mean, they both have. Both these schools have quarterback battles going on right now. They don't know, you know, who's going to do this. You're implementing new systems. It the degree of difficulty goes up. So, I mean, I'll be honest with you. If, you know, these teams end up going, let's say they play the whole schedule, right?
Yeah.
I would think that a 5-5 schedule or, you know, going 5-5 if you were these teams would be, you know, something to really write home about to a certain extent, because, you know, certainly when you look at these schedules, a 3-7 or a 4-6 is not out of the realm of possibility when we look at the challenges that these programs are facing.
Yeah. Don't they have to pull off like major upsets, you know, major upsets? You know,
but I mean, that gets down to like, I mean, I think you could handle a 3-7 or a 4-6. Certainly if one of those wins is you jacking up somebody that, you know, that you didn't expect, you know, if you're beating an LSU and ruining their season, if you're, you know, beating an Alabama or a Georgia for that matter and ruining their, you know, season, I almost think that's what you're shooting for. And again, we've gotten to that discussion and argument, you know, for years when we've talked about, you know, these teams in this state and what they can do realistically. And it's like, you know, we always talk about it. Go to a bowl game, give me a nice upset every year. And, you know, I don't know if you can ask for much more. You know what I mean? If you can be competitive, you know, don't get run out of buildings, be competitive, go, you know, like I said, go to a bowl game every year. And once a year, give me a game that I'm not supposed to win, that, you know, I can leave that stadium charged up because we just, you know, beat somebody we weren't supposed to beat.
I mean, that's what you got to hope for, right?
Yeah.
That's what you got to hope for in this situation. I mean, first year coach, I mean, I think this schedule is going to be fun. I hope it opens up the SEC's eyes that maybe they could somehow incorporate more conference games into the schedule, although coaches probably don't want that.
This is like one.
Yeah.
Give me one more conference game.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be – it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be a meat grinder. I mean, it's going to be – but it's going to be fun for the fans to watch. I'm hoping that they can pull this off and get all the way through it.
You're not going to have the filler, right? I mean, that's going to be the great part, is you don't have any filler in your schedule. You're not going to have those Saturdays. How many times have we sat here and you look at the slate of games on Saturday and you're like, oh, what is going on here? It's like, you know, across the country, you can't even find a good game. Or, you know, there's a couple of times a year where you're like, I don't have a ranked opponent playing another ranked opponent. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's happened with the way the schedule is. And you're sitting there going like, this is horrible. I've got Drek to watch. With that many games, normally you'll find something halfway decent. But, you know, when I'm sitting down and I'm looking and I can't find a good game that's, you know, that I'm interested in, it makes it tough to watch. You're not going to have that this year.
So can I tell you my idea for the SEC and that they'd never do?
Go ahead.
You know how the NFL, like you know your schedule except for two opponents until the previous season is concluded? I would like to see that, like, you know, take away your East matchups or West matchups, and that would be determined on position of finish the year before. Like you would play – like if you finish number one, you would play number one and number two home and away the next season. You know what I mean? That you could, in that way, it wouldn't, that way you would see probably more teams play quicker than what they have now. They have a rotating schedule where you get to see all the teams in a certain length of time, but only thing that would be predetermined would be your side of the conference schedule.
Well, they wouldn't do it because it would.
Because it would take away some of those. Them. It would take away Tennessee, Alabama. It would take away LSU, Florida.
You'd have problems with some of the rivalry games like you're talking about. And then the other thing you would get into is, you know, they wouldn't be able to set up two potential teams to go to the playoffs every year.
Oh boy.
It would hurt their chances at that.
Tinfoil hat wearing Doug Coleson is back.
They're not doing that. Well, you just brought schedule dork back, so that's fine. I mean, you know, how many times through the years would I have to ask you how the NFL schedule works
and you still don't understand it.
I still don't because I don't really care how that works. You, for some reason, want to work in the scheduling office, and that excites you.
No, I don't. I like the way they do it. I think it's perfectly symmetrical, and they're going to screw it up with an extra game. But anyway, it's perfectly symmetrical. How do you not like that in a schedule? Not you, but anybody. How do you not like to hear my obnoxious clock going off 5 minutes early? How do you not like a perfectly symmetrical schedule that it's close to fairly competitive as you can get it?
They don't want it fairly competitive. That's why you ended up with Arkansas and Missouri getting hosed and Alabama and you know, LSU getting free rides.
You're right.
I mean, come on. Let's be realistic here. I mean, that's my point. you know, I understand what you're saying, but that's not the world we live in. The world we live in is they're going to protect the teams they need to protect, and doing the schedule in a fair and righteous way doesn't protect those teams. So it's not going to happen.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I don't mean to rain all over your parade, but I'm just, you know.
All right. I think it would be good. Let's talk a little bit about this John Rhys Plumlee being accused of breaking social distancing guidelines after he appeared in a campus video that was promoting safety measures for.
I mean, yeah. So he appeared in this video, yeah. That was like they distributed on campus of telling people to socially distance and that kind of stuff. You've seen that. It's like a PSA, you know what I mean? They get some people that are, you know, doing this. Well, there was a woman that called out Plumlee saying that he was not following his own advice. Shortly after the video was shared, it says, "Sir, I drove past you and 10 other kids playing beer pong 2 days ago." And
let's just forget the beer pong thing. It's the social distancing we're worried about for the quarterback.
That is some of the issue there. I saw this story and I'm just like, first of all, I mean, how much of a busybody do you have to be to try to call somebody out? But I mean, I guess that's what the,
let me guess, her name was Karen. Sorry, go ahead.
It could have been. But my issue is, she said they were with 10 people and they were outside. Is that not, I mean, they weren't inside. It wasn't like she said, you know, hey, I saw you at a party with 400 other people crammed into a, you know, a house or whatever. It's not that I saw you, you know, at a bar on the square, you know, crammed in with a bunch of people. Yeah. She says she saw him outside with 10 people. I mean, that's less than what they, what do they say? No more than 20 something or whatever the guidelines are. It screams of somebody just being a busybody. Does it not?
Well, yeah, but aren't we a world full of busybodies these days?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know that that's
changed in terms of percentages or numbers. I think it has, but it could just be that we have more access to people acting like a busybody because of social media.
I'm surprised you didn't whip her phone out and take video of it and post that.
It's coming. But I mean, I really think that this virus is driving people crazy. And what I mean by that is just their response to it, that they feel they have to be social police, that they have to be.
There's a spectrum. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's people that are on the far ends on both sides.
Yes.
You know, the people that are, you've got the people that feel like they don't need to wear a mask and they don't need to socially distance and they don't need to be responsible citizens. And then on the other side, you have people that are too responsible that feel like they need to police everybody. They feel like they're wearing hazmat suits and they're, you know, I mean, isn't there some like,
middle ground?
I think there's a lot of room in the middle. If you're responsible and you're socially distanced and you're wearing your mask when you're in public and you're, you know, trying to be somewhat responsible, I think that's the vast majority of society. But, you know, again, it's the extremes that get, you know, the squeaky wheels that get the grease, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With this side,
oh yeah,
taking videos of everybody and this side, you know, cussing out store owners and stuff. But, you know, there is most people are in the middle. And if it's like we could get those people to all shut up and stop griping at each other, yeah, maybe the world would be a little bit of a better place. Now, again, part of the problem we're dealing with here on these college campuses is we're taking a bunch of 20-year-olds, we're throwing them on a college campus and acting like they're not going to do college kid type things, which is have parties and hang out and not.
Where would you be on that? Well, I mean, you know, we'd both be right up in the middle of it.
I'd be right there with the rest of them. Yes. I can't criticize these college kids, because if I was 20 years old and, you know, this was going on, if this would have been going on in the early 90s when I was in my 20s, it would have been, I would have been right there with my Zuba pants and, you know, not socially distancing with people.
And there were like Miami Dolphins Zuba pants too, weren't they? Or no, Buffalo Bills?
I had Green Bay Packers. I had a pair of Green Bay Packers Zubas. And I don't even know why. I don't even know where I got them from. That's what I had. I couldn't find Seahawk ones. I wish I would have had Seahawk ones.
You couldn't get Seahawk gear back then.
You had a problem trying to get.
Do you know that I told somebody this weekend? It was a young person. No. They asked me. They were asking me who my team was, and I said the Seahawks, and they go, "Oh, really? For how long?" And I was offended, like I suddenly just jumped ship 10 years ago when they became a marquee franchise for the time. Yeah. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Don't look at, you wash your mouth out, kid. Get away from me.
Right. I mean, you should have told them, like, hey, I got underwear older than you. Yeah. You know, I think that you should be, when you're of a certain age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should not be accused of that type of stuff, right?
But there's people our age that do it. We know that. There's people our age that jump teams because they want to be. There's people of all ages that do that. But give me the respect.
Okay. Now I switched teams kinda. You know what I mean? When I baseball wise, we've talked about this before. Yeah. That I mean, I grew up a Yankees fan, been a Yankee fan my whole life. I'm still a Yankees.
It's not allowed. It's not allowed.
But there was a couple of years ago going back. Where it got, I got very frustrated with the, have to win the World Series every year. And if you don't win the World Series every year, as a Yankee fan, the season is a complete failure. You know, it doesn't matter if you made it to the World Series. Doesn't matter if you made it to the ALCS or won a pennant or whatever. None of that, all that other stuff was immaterial. It's only winning the World Series. It's World Series or bust every single year. And I got frustrated with that. And I said, you know what? I'm going to root for the Cubs because I need something to root for.
Yeah.
I need something. And shortly after that, the Cubs went and won the World Series. And I was kind of like, nah, I can't really root for the Cubs. So I renounced it. As quick as I, jumped on their bandwagon, I renounced it. But I would say, people of a certain age, we don't jump teams the way – I mean,
no,
I remember having a – I mean, I remember having a distinct, that was a big thing. I mean, I remember having, when I was picking my teams and I was of a certain age, I remember having conversations with my dad where he was like, okay, are you sure? Because this is important. He's like, you pick a team.
He's right.
You stick with that team. You don't jump. You don't switch teams. You know, I mean, we went through a whole – I remember the conversation. I might have been about 7 or 8 years old. And this is the team you're rooting for. Yep, this is the team. And I'm serious. It really, it was a big deal. It was important. And you don't switch teams. So I would think, when we get to a certain age, you can't accuse anybody of jumping. Not us at this point. It's not like we're eight. Or 10 or, I would have been frustrated by that too.
What? And it was the way that it was asked too. For how long? And I'm like, it wasn't oh, when'd you become a fan?
Yeah.
It was that kind of nose. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
I would have been I hate that you have to everybody talks about having receipts now, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
You got to go back to, I was a fan back when, you know, I always kind of kid Braves fans about the whole, you know, because every, when you ask a Braves fan or you talk to a Braves fan, it's always, you know, it's always like, oh, I've been a Braves fan since, you know,
Hank
Aaron. I go all the way back to, you know, an older fan. Yes, you get the Hank, you get the, you know, it's just, it's funny to me though, that, you know, people have to qualify it. You know, but you had the Dale Murphy fans, you know what I'm saying? Like the fans that were like, you know,
yeah,
I've been a Braves fan since Dale Murphy, to like qualify that, like, I just didn't jump on the bandwagon in the 90s when they got good. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know why people feel the need, why we have to make people, you know, qualify when they, you know, got onto the, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anyway, I don't know. I was like, are you kidding me?
Like, yeah. I got some nerve. I would have been fighting.
All right, let's get on to a few other things here before we have to wrap up. So, you know, we've got the rankings of the schedules on Saturday down south. Let's save that, because I think let's do the AP top 25, the preseason top 25. And you asked the question to me in the text message you sent me, why are Big Ten and Pac-12 teams still ranked? Well, I got no idea. They can't move.
It,
right?
It's weird. It's just like, I kind of understand why they did it, but we know that they're not playing. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been one thing if this one came out and then, you know, they pulled out and said, okay, we're not playing this year. But, hey, you already know that they're not playing. It's strange that they have 9 teams in this top 25,
yeah,
you know, the official preseason AP poll, and there's 9 teams in there that are not going to be playing football this year.
We should get Ralph Russo on the phone.
It's kind of it'd be good to talk to Ralph. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
But Jets, sure. Jets.
He was a huge Jets fan. Yeah. To kind of bust his chops about that.
So here it is. Here's the preseason top 25. Clemson.
Yep.
Ohio State.
Not playing.
Right. Georgia. I mean, Alabama. Alabama 3.
Alabama's 3.
Georgia's 4. Oklahoma 5. LSU 6.
You got a problem with Oklahoma being ahead of LSU?
No. I don't. I mean, these preseason polls are worthless to me. But
I know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't. Let's see. Penn State 7.
Right. Another team not playing.
Right. Florida 8.
Yep.
Oregon 9. Not playing. Notre Dame 10.
So that's 3 out of the top 10 that are not playing.
Yeah. Auburn 11. Wisconsin 12. Texas A&M 13. Texas 14. Oh, that'll kill some Texas fans. 15 is Oklahoma State. 16 is Michigan. 17 USC. 18 North Carolina. 19 Minnesota. 20 Cincinnati. Which league is Cincinnati in? Still the America? Is it the AAC?
Cincinnati is in the. You're going to ask me that.
Yeah. Central Florida is 21. Well, Utah 22. Iowa State 23. Iowa 24. And Tennessee 25. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, the interesting part is, you know, because of those 9 teams that you have that are not going to be in this, that's going to automatically week 2, they're taking these teams out. They've already announced they're taking those teams out
week
2, which obviously makes sense. But that's going to move, you know, some of your teams, your others getting votes. I mean, that's going to shoot them right into the polls. And you've got a Mississippi State that is, you know, Kentucky's in that group. Mississippi State is in that group. Now, you know, Mississippi State starting with LSU, so probably not going to win that game. Probably not going to, but you know what? If you're Mississippi State, right?
Right.
Let's throw this out there. I mean, you know, do I think they're going to beat LSU? No, I don't. But, you know, could I lay out a scenario where you've got LSU coming off a national championship? They're going to be hanging, you know, you got so many new players for them. When you look at, you know, how many new players and coaches are on that staff and that kind of stuff, it's going to be different for them. There's no question. It's different for everybody. Yeah. I understand that. But when you look at that, I mean, that's going to be kind of an interesting, you're going to have all that. I mean, it's going to be weird. They're going to be hanging a banner. You're not going to have a full stadium that you're doing it in front of. So it has the potential to be distracting and a little flat. Could Mississippi State catch them flat-footed is what I'm getting at.
I mean, I guess. I'm interested if State's going to make the top 25. They're ranked. I mean, they're getting votes in the poll right now. But, I mean, is that – you know, you talked about this season being a wash. Is this going to be tainted this year if, like, you finish in the top 25? Or you win a national championship. Is it tainted this year?
I think it depends on who. You know what I mean? I think if you're playing a whole conference schedule that way and you finish in the top 25, I think that's something to celebrate. Now, if you're winning a national championship and you're, say, in Alabama where you stack national championships, I know they'll be ready to add a patch to their jacket and, you know, have another, you know, think of all the national championships they count that aren't really national championships. So why wouldn't they count this one? But I mean, again, you know, I think you're going to have people. Teams are playing. If you're the team that's left standing at the end of this thing, hey, you're the national champion.
Yeah.
So you're going to have other fans saying it. But I wouldn't let that bother me one bit if I was, you know, any of these other schools.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, so if I had to say, Doug, how far are we getting into the season? What would you put your money on right now?
I'd be willing to say we're going to get at least a month in.
You think?
I think we'll get at least a month.
If you say the over under for you is four games.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I was setting an over under, I'd set it at, you know, four or five games, but I think we'll be able to get I think we'll get somewhere, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough to finish the season. I would not. I hope we do. I'm not. Yeah. And I don't understand this. There's like this opinion out there that there are people that work in sports media that are against the season being played, which I don't understand. I'm not against the season being played. Do I think it's going to be played or finished? I don't know. I'm not. I wouldn't put money on it. But that doesn't mean I don't want it to be played or I don't want it to, you know, I mean, I'd love for this. I wish the Big Ten was playing this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wish
we were in a state where we weren't talking about this, you know, I mean, not in a state, in a country. I mean, I wish this wasn't going on that we had to deal with it, but yeah, I mean, I want to see everybody playing.
Have you heard this? I mean, have you seen any of this out there where people are – people are acting like there's people in the media that don't want the season to be played. And I'm like, this is crazy talk. I mean, who doesn't want the season to be played? You think there's people out there that actually, you know, make their living on college football or whatever sport it is
job because of lack that, of
right.
I just from people reading their websites or their pay. I don't get into the minutiae of all that.
It just seems nuts to me, though. I mean, that just seems That seems like really out of left field. It doesn't compute to me, because somebody doesn't think the season's going to be played, or somebody's, you know, they don't think this happened right, or that was handled right, or,
right,
you know, that they're going to be able to pull the season off. It doesn't mean people don't want it to happen.
No, just because they have the opinion, and the thing about it is, if you have an opinion, and we all have opinions about this virus, if you say that you're concerned about it, then therefore you are automatically, it seems like in the sports media, against the season happening, which makes no
sense. And my thing is, like, I don't think they're going to finish the season, but I hope I'm 100% wrong about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope I'm dead wrong, and I will gladly admit that I was dead wrong about it when the season, you know, if we're playing a quote unquote national championship, you know.
I don't feel that way. I don't feel that people don't want the season to happen. But that's exactly what we were just talking about earlier, the extremes of opinions and how you can get, the spectrum is so wide, and you can get so caught up in all of that we can't have some sort of a common ground. You can't say that you think the virus is serious and it not be that you're a fear monger or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it is. And you can't say that you don't care, or you don't think this virus is serious, and therefore you are you're trying to kill humanity because you don't. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand it.
That spectrum that we were talking about.
Yeah. Right. All right. Let's, Doug, let's get into our quarantine stream. Okay. And I watched one that you're going to talk about. Actually, I saw it after you told me about it. So, one I think you're going to talk about, but go ahead.
Yeah, I went and I found the E60 on Alex Smith. And, you know, people remember him being injured and broke his leg. It was really bizarre, too, playing for the Washington Redskins 33 years to the day of Joe Theismann getting tackled by Lawrence Taylor and snapping his leg, and, you know, the compound fracture kind of stuff. And, you know, Alex Smith had the same thing happen to him, and they did an E60 on it that, if you have not seen, you know, be careful, because it's extremely graphic. I mean, when you look at what has happened to his leg, and you look at his leg, and, you know, they show his leg, it looks like it was eaten by a velociraptor. I mean, and it is grand. And they keep those pictures up way too long, too. And that was my one complaint of the E60. To see what he went through, and, you know, Joe Theismann talked about it, and he said, you know, I had one surgery after they put my leg back together to deal with infections.
Yeah.
And Alex Smith had 17 surgeries. 17 surgeries that they kept cutting away from his leg and cutting away. Like I said, the pictures they were showing when they were done with those surgeries, I mean, it looked the only thing I could describe is like a chicken leg that had been eaten, that you saw the bone and there was a little bit of meat, and, you know, it is a fascinating E60, and to think that Alex Smith is playing and trying to come back right now, I mean, I've got the utmost, like, ridiculous amount of respect for that guy. I almost think he's kind of nuts, to be honest with you, because I don't even know how you could go through what he's gone through. And he went through a 24-hour period where he almost lost the leg completely.
He almost died. You know, he could have died.
He could have died, but, I mean, and he went through a long period of where he could have lost the leg and that kind of stuff, and they were able to save it. The fact that he's able to be out there, 2 years later, you know, playing again, he is out practicing right now. just the mental stuff that you would have to go through to, you know, the potential of him injuring himself again, or, you know, just, I don't know. It's fascinating. I hope he's able to, like, even if he never starts another game in the NFL or never plays as a starter again, if he's just on a team and, you know, puts that uniform on again, I mean, I like I said, I after watching that E60, I have nothing but the utmost respect for Alex Smith, and I couldn't root for a player that's not on my team any harder to be successful.
Ditto on every bit of that. I would buy his jersey.
Yeah,
I mean, really, I would, because I was blown away by his attitude, by his fortitude, by his. And I just saw it, like, I think I saw it Saturday afternoon. You told me about it. And I knew, of course, I knew all about it. I had not seen the depths of it. I knew.
But that's what I was saying. Like, I knew the story too, but I did not know how severe it was and how, you know what I mean? Like, when you see just through the process of his leg, when you look at his leg with those grafts that they had to do, and when you look at his leg with that halo that they had to put on it, that he walked around in for God knows how long, you know, from the mental aspect to go into military hospitals and, you know, talking with you know, people that have lost, you know, limbs. Because he went through essentially the same thing that people who in combat have lost a limb or you know, had gone through similar injuries that way. It really is just a fascinating story. And this – his career and what he's been through, you know, when you talked about the multiple teams that he played for and, you know, I mean, through no fault of his own, he's a guy that, you know, I mean, how many offensive coordinators did he have in San Francisco? He finally starts playing well there and has success there, and they ship him out and Colin Kaepernick thing happens and, you know, he's gone off to Kansas City and he's, you know, playing really well there and doing pretty good there. And like, all of a sudden, a once-in-a-lifetime generational talent comes along like Mahomes that Kansas City identified. And, you know, hey, now he's off to Washington. And, you know, next thing you know, he's playing pretty well in Washington until, you know, this happens. But like I said, I mean, one of the more fascinating and inspirational stories I think you can see. If you can stomach the you know, the pictures of the leg, because it is – from the infection part to the, you know, the injury with all the pins and everything. I mean, you got to be able to handle some of that medical stuff to watch that, but it is well worth it to watch that. No doubt about it. That's one of the better E60s I've seen.
That's my quarantine stream as well. All right, Doug, you got an album of the week for us?
I don't have one this week. I'm sorry.
I think it should be, Magnet and Steel, maybe the song of because that's yours and Jennifer's song.
Walter Egan.
we're in honor of Jennifer, you know. So let's do that. Just the song.
All right.
No.
Well, she would want me to pick. She would want me to pick like Rick Springfield or something. You know.
Well, that's what you need to do. Get like next week's album of the week needs to be Jennifer's choice. How about that?
All right.
Does she listen to albums though? I don't see her as an album person. She's a top. She's gonna a pop music.
We're gonna end up with Stevie Nicks. Why did you say that? I'm not letting her pick. It's not happening. Ugh. Right. Belladonna by Stevie Nicks.
I do too.
Go ahead.
Chuck and Doug Reloaded is produced by Mississippi Scoreboard. Be sure to subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to give us a rating, a good rating, if you will. That'll help people find us. For more on Mississippi Scoreboard, you can find them at MississippiScoreboard.com, on Facebook at Mississippi Scoreboard, and on Twitter at MS Scoreboard. Before we go, Doug, let everybody know again the code for Mississippi Blood Services for Jennifer.
DZ04.
DZ04.
Yeah, right. So if you go to Mississippi Blood Services and you want to donate in my wife's name, you just give them that code before you donate. You have to do it before you donate. Yeah. You can't do it afterwards, but they'll normally ask you if there's somebody you're donating for. If you just give that code, she'll get credited for it, which, like I said, we're just anybody that can donate and help out. Like I said, the blood was there for my wife when she needed it. We're just trying to replenish it so the blood is there when somebody else needs it.
All right, DZ04 at Mississippi Blood Services. All right, that's it for this edition of Chuck and Doug Reloaded. Thanks for listening, everybody.